It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer.
Hey, Irish fans, welcome back to Dome and Domer, the oldest Notre Dame sports podcast on the planet. I'm Mike Sullivan, Notre Dame class of 1990, and joining me today, Mike Brammer from the class of 90 and Ed Jordanic, class of 89. If you came looking for expert analysis on what happened in the game against Texas A&M, this probably is not the podcast for you. But we're Notre Dame fans that are passionate about the Irish, and we need some place to emote and vent, and so we're going to do that for the next 12 to 15 minutes. Well, guys, I got to tell you, didn't think we'd be sitting here at 0-2, and you know, that was as disappointing an outcome. And we've seen some heartbreak over the years, but that was a really disappointing outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I have not heard from anybody that was at the game. I'm curious as to the atmosphere. I don't know if you guys heard anything. I assume it was pretty good, but there were a lot of A&M fans.
What I heard.
Yeah, a lot of A&M fans there. We had, what, 70 recruits there? I mean, we had probably the biggest recruiting weekend in a long time. The game itself for college football, I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed watching it back and forth like that with a bunch of scores. But as a Notre Dame fan, man, that was tough to take. That was a gut punch if there ever was one. And it's frustrating. It was really frustrating to watch, just knowing there were so many times a single play here or there could have been the difference in the game. But it all adds up, and we're 0-2 right now, and that is the reality of the world. And they're going to have their backs against the wall. This is going to be a hell of a season. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. And but Freeman's been in this situation before, so he's been there, done that in terms of starting out slow. And this will be interesting to see him, if he can weave some magic again and turn this around.
It's really interesting how we talked on the first show about narratives going in, right? And they've been completely flipped on their head. CJ Carr has played well enough to win the first two games. And everybody else has been suboptimal, and have, you know, racked up a number of sort of mistakes. You know, we were all three of us and were texting and coffee, and we're pleased with the special teams. I think that was one of our pick six. And sure enough, we get a block punt for a touchdown. And then it was our undoing at the end, which is crazy. And not just the, you know, I thought it was kind of funny. I mean, Buckner, after fumbling the snap, made the perfect textbook play that you do when something like that happens. You know, he got up, felt pressure to his right, turned away from the rush, rolled to his left. The blocking end, you know, this is a fire drill, right? They practiced, you know, he peeled off to the left, but then he's Tyler Buckner, so he overthrew him by 20 yards, you know, like, so, you know. And then there's also, you know, it's easy to forget, they didn't defend the kickoff after they took the lead. I mean, you know, this team has not made the play at the crucial time, and it has cost them two games. And they are going to be on the outside looking in. Freeman's been able to keep guys from getting selfish. He's been able to keep guys from mailing it in. I think we'll probably see a lot of young guys play the rest of the year, even more so than we thought we would. But they have some serious, serious issues on the defensive side of the ball, and I don't know what the answers are. I mean,
all right, let's jump back into take a look at the pick six, and kind of just go through how those things impacted the game. So, in some ways, you know, none of it matters, right? You know, great, right? EJ Carr got his vertical touchdown pass. Now, ultimately, long term development of the offense. That was good to see, right? So nice ball down the sideline on a wheel route to Jeremiah Love. That was good to see. We're obvious, you know, he threw for near 290, 295, something like that. So we're getting production out of the passing game. All that's good to see. So we did, that was one of our pick six. The special teams play. Now, to me, what's interesting about that is, you know, it's not Marty Biagi being some wizard. It sure looked like a little bit of a breakdown misassignment on A&M's part. Guy comes free, right? So, but the fundamentals, I loved the fundamentals of how we blocked the kick, right? Great technique in blocking the punt.
Yeah, it didn't touch the punter. I mean, just
no, it was really just the way you teach it. And I'm sure they drill it. And then we had a, you know, we pinned them deep on a well-executed punt. Great fundamentals. And then fundamentals that, as you said, right, just the simplest thing in the world. And we don't execute. And broadly speaking, I agree with you. Like this team through two games, and it's only two games, and there's a long way to go yet, so I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But through two games, just haven't been able to execute consistently throughout the game. It looks good at times, but at key times, there's breakdowns. And breakdowns that result in big plays for the opposition. Okay, so vertical passing. We got special teams made a big play. Yep. We thought we would get two turnovers, and I thought it would be Marcel Reed. Came up one short, you know. And so we didn't get that. Malachi Fields, what do you guys think? I think he had
a good game.
A little bit of a breakout game.
Yeah.
Hard to say that in a loss, but, you know,
he's – too.
He did, yeah. But it's you know, the Hail Mary also, like, is that not pass interference? we'll get to the officiating here in a minute. The running backs got 35 combined carries. You would have thought that would have been enough, but only 130-ish yards rushing. And so we clearly made that a point of emphasis. Didn't really matter. So the defense, why don't we dig in on the defensive side of things? Obviously, the secondary got torched for about 300 yards, and there was a lot of personnel. 360. Yeah, there was a lot of churn with the personnel too. Like Devonta Smith got injured pregame, and then a ridiculous targeting call, and we lose Adon Shuler. Both Gray and Leonard Moore are out at times. You know, that was all.
What was the explanation on that targeting call, by the way? Because usually they have a press conference and there'll be discussion points that the refs will say, all right, hey, look, here's why we called that. I didn't see that anywhere. Did anybody see that? Like, what was the rule on that call? Like, okay, you lowered your head, you hit him below the shoulders. So what exactly does he do on that he should have done?
I can't understand that call. I really can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that was a big, big moment in the game. And to lose Adon Shuler, of all people, it's pretty obvious that losing Kaiser, losing Howard Cross, losing Mills, you know, these guys up the middle that were stout for us last year.
Xavier Watts. You took, Xavier take those Watts, four guys.
Yeah.
Not in the right. We're feeling it. I think.
And all of a sudden now we just don't have guys that have replaced them at each position like that. And we're struggling, at least at the moment. I think we feel like we got that kind of talent, but man, they're just not executing at all. And the tackling has just been horrible. And unfortunately it's on video. You can't, you know, you hate to see that thing get replayed and replayed and replayed, but man, what a horrible job coming up on that. Just lowering your head, not even doing anything with your arms. And
on the 86 yard touchdown pass. Yeah. You're talking, that was just this. Just terrible.
Kind of a whiff. It's just one of those things.
That's a perfect example of what we were talking about last week, this kind of overused phrase about complementary football, right? You get this block, you know, you have this momentum, you have the crowd on your side, and then you give up this, you know, this, you know, crazy explosive 86 yard, you know, like, and it's the same thing. You take the lead, everybody's going bonkers, and you miss an extra point, and you let the crowd, it's the timing of these, this lack of execution that Mike Sullivan is talking about that's so upsetting and so discouraging, because that's what's cost them the games. Like, they've executed at times, you know, well enough to win the football game, but then they turn around and do these inexplicable things. Just real quick on the I thought it was kind of interesting on the, you know, on the targeting call. I think it was the flip side of the end of the game, whereas, you know, Reese stayed down, you know, and then suddenly they're reviewing it for targeting, right?
Yeah.
You know, these referees, you know, that's it, you know, and then at the end of the game, Heinisch gets up so quickly from being tackled that they don't call holding,
yeah.
Which was, I mean, as bad a hold. I mean, let's face it, they don't call holding anymore, except if you clothesline somebody and get them around the neck, right? or if you tackle somebody like that guy did. But those are the two, but that was one of those. Like that wasn't kind of like a little jersey tug or a little, you know, a little body wrestle or whatever. That was one that they call.
He flat out tackled him. Yeah. I mean,
he completely tackled him, and it was material to the play because Heinisch is best case scenario, going to make a sack and end the game. Maybe he flushes them and disrupts the timing and, you know, who knows what.
Oh, it's huge.
That was a huge no call. No call. Now, listen, a couple things I'm never going to – never say never. I rarely think play calling costs us the game, and I rarely think officiating costs us the game. Three horrible calls or missed calls by the officials, certainly. But we just didn't play good enough to win. No, and it's these it's these breakdowns in – execution that are really disappointing and head scratching, poor tackling, you know, biting on double moves, lack of eye discipline. You know, I don't understand. And maybe those are the types of things where leadership, the missing leadership, makes a difference. You know, we don't know, we're not there, but you know, they're going to have to do some deep, deep soul searching to right this ship.
Just real quick on that, because I do think that leadership on the field matters. But I always go back to the example of, like, there are multiple examples where going into a football season, a really good coach like Joe Moore would basically have four, maybe five guys that had almost no experience. Or he would go into some seasons where he would have, you know, two linemen who had played some and three who hadn't or whatever. Or there's been other position groups or other years where – and the leadership comes from the coordinator or the position coach, and those guys gel quickly and you've got a really good, strong unit. So we've seen the, you know, we've seen the flip side of that coin. Like we've seen situations where there's been certain position groups or sides of the ball that we thought were going to be weak links that turned out to be a strength of the team. What's so discouraging about this is we're seeing what we perceive to be strengths of the team turning out to be weak links. And I think the leadership that I'm really concerned about is the guy that's running the defense. I mean, I'm not quite sure philosophically what's going on. I'm not quite sure. I know we know fundamentally we're not doing well. But I, you know, I mean, it's a huge, there's less swagger. It's a very different look than last year. And I don't know enough to know schematically what's going on, but I do know that there is, that they're playing with a lack of confidence too, which is really just upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, the results or lack thereof speak for themselves. Obviously, they're not playing well. And, you know, the people responsible for making them, you know, play prepared and play well have to make adjustments. But, you know, again, I'm going to reserve judgment for the whole season, not two games. Marcus Freeman's first game as defensive coordinator, and he was the hot defensive coordinator in the country. You know, we get torched by Florida State, lucky to win that game in overtime with a long field goal. And Florida State's offense that year, I think I was listening to Eric Hansen. I think they finished like 80th or something to that effect. They weren't a great offense, and we got torched. Al Golden's first year. Didn't have any turnovers in the first three games, and we're all pulling our hair out about that. There is an adjustment period. Let's let it play out and see before, you know, there's just a lot of crazy overreaction coming at the defensive coordinator. We've played poorly. They got to own that, but I just think let's be a little more
measured. Definitely early. I would agree with you there 100%. But I think the other thing, though, is, and both sides of the ball for this, is the lack of plays. We just aren't making plays in big moments. But even some of the more frustrating stuff, the stuff that you pull your hair out on, are just the normal plays. Some of those that we're not making, you know, the throw to Faison that he dropped, where it was a little bit low, but that's a ball you've got to catch.
He's got to catch
that's a huge moment in the game. I mean, that we were about to put our foot on the pedal, and you just drop a ball like that. And that Ram,
it was a first down play early early in the game, in the first quarter, it's a first down play. It wasn't that critical. Now, you and I were talking about it.
We didn't get that. We turned the ball over that series.
What bothered me about it was it puts us at 2nd and 10. We run Love. He gets, you know, 8.5, 9 yards. And then we get stoned on 3rd down and have to punt it. And, you know, so which is the bigger play there, getting stoned on 3rd down and 1 or the drop ball on first down. I didn't like the drop ball. It would have put us ahead of the chains, not behind the chains.
It was ahead. Yeah, we would have, right.
Right, but it's hard to say that was a critical play in the game. But little mistakes, like we're talking about here, always bite you in the butt, you know, over the course of a game. We're making too many of those kinds of plays.
Yeah, too many of those, right.
Eddie, I'm with you. I have no idea why, right? But they're going to have, whether it's leadership of guys, coaches have to maybe take a different approach. You know, this is one of the things I think we love about college football is it's really a different team every year. Guys aren't under contract. You have new faces and, you know, how they gel in their role, how they gel as a unit, all those things sometimes don't quite line up the way we want them to early in the year. I'm not going to, you know, hit the panic button just yet. We're getting close. But I think 10-2 is still right there for us. They're going to have to get better. We're going to have to get better.
What did you guys think of, you know, Blackledge make? And I don't know how to interpret it. You know, Blackledge made the remark about, you know, we had just pinned them deep. And, you know, Faison had a nice punt return and we scored, right? And then we were in the same situation and we decided to go for it at midfield. You know, and, you know, what do we have, like 8 tackles for losses, you know, and Love gets stuffed. So they get, you know, the field flips. And I don't know, like, if that's Freeman. I just didn't quite understand that. I found myself agreeing with Blackledge. And maybe that's just because of the way that it turned out. But, you know,
boy, I like kicking it there, Eddie. You know, yeah. I tend to be more philosophically conservative in those things, you know, and I know they have the analytics and all that. Maybe sometimes he's going on feel. For me, I like punting it deep and making them go the long way.
Yeah, making them go the whole distance. That, yeah,
right,
I mean,
right.
The play call itself, though. I mean, not necessarily the play call, but the play design. Let's call it. So you've got Carr out wide. Okay, clearly he's not going to lead a block or anything like that, and his guy makes the tackle, and he comes off of him early, and it would have been nice if Love had the option to just toss it over his head. That would have gone for 25 yards. But it just for him to be wide like that and have that guy be free and come and make the tackle. I mean, that's I don't know. It was frustrating to see that. And it's just it is what it is. The play didn't work. Had it worked, we'd all be excited. But it's just frustrating to sit there and see us not get 4th and 1. Going wide and that guy makes that play. That was big in the game.
You know, after the Miami game, I think we were a little surprised about how many design runs were called for Carr. Were there any called for him Saturday night?
I don't think he ran. No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Not one.
He
should have ran it on the interception. He should have just take off.
Right. But again, some of that is, I would think, the game plan is dictated by how Miami aligns and plays certain looks that we're giving them. Sure. And so that play might be there against Miami and it might not be there against A&M. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're right. There weren't any designed runs.
Right. And if you talk to coaches, they like to say, well, you know, we have to impose our will and all that kind of stuff. You know, in other words, they don't like to say like, oh, we're just going to, you know, do what, you know, every single time we're going to do what the defense, you know, I mean, there's got to be times where, you know, the play call is, you know, a quarterback draw. There's got to be times in every game where that makes sense, where that is, you know, a viable option. I was just surprised on some of those, on like that particular instance. Like, I just don't understand why Carr is on the field if you're going to run the Wildcat. Like, get an extra guy in there, you know, Aeneas Williams is like in a witness protection program. He was we were all complaining last year. Why is Aeneas Williams on the field on third down? What's Denbrock doing? Why doesn't he have Love or Price out there? Well, our third down conversion rate last year and fourth down was pretty freaking good. A lot of that was Riley Leonard, but Aeneas Williams made a lot of plays on third down. He got a lot of tough yards. He got caught a lot.
I think he's been hurt though. I think part of that is his health. I think he's been hurt. I could be wrong about that, but I heard
he wears number 22 now, and I saw him on the field a couple times on special.
Yeah, but I think he's banged up or something.
He could be limited in practice, and so he's not getting reps in the game. But Eddie, you know, to my knowledge, you leave Carr in there or a quarterback in there you're not personnel wise triggering the defense to match your personnel. Like if you take Carr out, they are going to change their personnel package a little bit to match up, because they know we're not throwing the ball in that situation. So that's why a true Wildcat leaves the quarterback in. But
now, wait a second. They know we're not throwing the ball. Okay, how does the percentage of us throwing the ball go down by putting the quarterback on the split out as a wide receiver?
It's personnel grouping.
Personnel.
If they see the quarterback out, they're going to match their defensive personnel in a way that they can't do when we have, you know, 11 personnel in the huddle. They're going to match that in their huddle. If you take Carr out, they're going to match that in a different way. So I think that's why they probably do that.
Right. No, I guess I understand that. I'm just thinking, like, why wouldn't you get another guy in the box to get another hat on a hat that knows what the hell they're doing?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they probably send out, you know, their weakest link out there on Carr, because they have to have somebody guarding, or they have to have somebody at least out there to, you know.
But he didn't even guard Carr, though. That's the point.
If you watch that play, the guy that was on Carr split wide, he makes the tackle.
Yeah, he leaves Carr, he just gives it up.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and watch it. I'm guessing the play's not designed to go that way with CJ Carr blocking the edge. I think he bounced it. It's probably inside zone or something, and he probably bounced it back.
Yeah.
But I watched it once in real time, and I don't know. That's not why we lost, guys.
I know.
We're getting down in the minutia on.
Yeah, it's frustrating. There's a lot of plays. But overall, I think it's the number of plays, right? There's just several plays that we could sit here and talk all night about that led to just head scratchers that you know, leads to us losing the football game. And that's the frustrating thing, is there's multiple plays. There's not just one.
When A&M has double-digit tackles for losses, or, you know, 8 or 9 or whatever, turns out, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, that's
a lot.
Those are drive-killing plays. You know,
it puts us in a bad situation when you're 3rd and 8. You know, because you just gave up 4 yards. Should be 3rd and 4.
Yeah, a number of times they just turn guys loose at the point of attack or on the backside. Just we turn guys loose like that. It's unbelievable. So obviously,
but also on that 4th and 1, the other thing that happened, right? And you'll watch this and you'll see it. We pulled a lineman and he went out and didn't touch anybody. Now, maybe nobody was, whoever it was that he was going to be head up on just wasn't there. I guess that's possible, but he literally didn't touch anybody. And so we had one less blocker in that particular play. That's the kind of stuff that just is head scratching. You're kind of like, all right, how many things are going to go wrong for us? You know, how many times are we going to see a play? Just
the reason we're so frustrated is because we, you know, whether this was deserved or not, we're already and willing to live with growing pains on the offensive side of the ball. We were not prepared for this on the defensive side of the ball.
No.
And I think that's what really is getting to us,
yeah.
You know, because we expected some execution issues on the offensive side of the ball. The things that we were just talking about now, you know, need to be cleaned up, of course, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But they scored 40 points. They moved the ball for the most
35, but yeah.
I'm sorry, you're right, 35.
Yeah. But they
played well enough to win.
They did. They played, can't argue with the offense. I mean, they're really playing well, even with the mistakes that they're making. They're you know, it shows how good they're going to be, I think. And that's a very positive sign, because they are good and they're going to get better.
The execution's got to get cleaned up, you know, consistently performing at the standard. But defensively, it's a little bit more than just cleaning some things up. We're not the tackling in the secondary is what bothers me the most. Like the play of the secondary, the inability to get a pass rush. You know, last year we weren't a completely suffocating defense against the run. We weren't. We were about 40th in the country, 130 yards a game. We're not that far off of that. It's the inability to have negative plays, the havoc rate, the negative plays that we're not getting, and the tackling. Right? Those are the things that are really bothering.
And obviously A&M saw something, because they obviously came out and said, we're going to work the middle of the field. Like, we see something and we're going to throw those slants, we're going to throw those digs, we're going to throw those plays to get our speedy guys. I mean, they saw what Tony did to us in the first half last week, and they saw something there, and that's what they focused on, and we did not have an answer, period.
Well, let's hope we get an answer. I hate to be Purdue. Like last year, they got us right after Northern Illinois, and now they're getting us right after two gut punches. And we're going to take out our frustration on Purdue next Saturday in a big way. I can't wait. So let's hope that Coach Freeman and the coaching staff and
how about NBC, by the way, really quick? How about NBC calling out Marion Knights going down 31-0 to St. Joe?
Like, yeah, that's insult to injury right there.
Yeah, so, I was like, what are you guys showing that for?
Yeah. All right. So we're going to wrap it up there. We'll come back tomorrow, maybe Monday, maybe Tuesday, talk about Coach Freeman's press conference. Until then, for Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Sullivan. We'll see you next time on Dome and Domer.